It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here today. Well, look, we've got in studio with us today Mike Gelman, author and senior talent manager advisor at SoCalGas, and he's going to share some insights from 15 years as an internal consultant and coach to employees and leaders in corporate and nonprofit organizations. He's the author of the recently released book, Pipe Dreams, Seven Pipelines of Career Success. And our topic is manifesting your pipe dreams, creating career management strategies and opportunities that matter. But before we get to Mike, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999. And hey, congratulations to me. I just got an email today saying that for some weird reason, they renewed my certification once again.
Wow. Have they been listening to the shows? Do they know what you're talking about?
No, I'm sure they haven't, or they wouldn't have renewed it. Anyhow, I've been coaching business owners and senior executives and their teams for, I think 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of the coaching perspective. And if you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. Or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, look, let's get to Mike. Mike, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Hi, Doug. Thank you.
Well, we're excited to have you here today, and you've got a lot to share. And I must say I've enjoyed getting to learn a little bit more about you as we got ready for the show over the last couple weeks. We've connected a few times at ICF meetings, but never really had much of a chance to talk. So thank you very much for making the time commitment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, tell us a little bit about what you do. What do you do? Who do you service? You've got two businesses going here, at least that I know of. So,
sure. So by day, I'm working as an internal coach and organizational development consultant, talent management focus for the SoCalGas company. And so I support business units throughout the company. And so my role has shifted over time as well, and my focus. But I run a career coaching and development center for employees and provide coaching to them one-on-one, in groups, as well as training classes on the types of things that they should be thinking about to manage their career effectively within the company.
So this is career management for growth within the company, not career transition to get out of the company.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And it's a pretty sizable company with around 8,000 employees. And so there's a lot of movement within the company, and many employees come in not necessarily knowing their early career, not necessarily knowing how to navigate the way around the company. And then there's others who are mid-career that have been working 10, 15 years or longer and are either burnt out and are ready for a change or just need some support to make it to the next level that they want to get to.
Great. Okay. And so you fulfill that function through internal coaching, through organizational development, and through training.
All three? Sure, yeah.
Do you find, how effective is it? Well, let me rephrase this. One of the debates I hear between an internal and an external coach is who's going to tell the internal coach the real truth, because he's right there in the company and knows you and knows your boss and everything else. Speak to that topic.
That's actually a great question. Confidentiality is really an important aspect in coaching in general, and it's the same as an internal coach. And so when I work with a client internally, or a team member of mine works with a client internally, one of the things we do is we have a coaching agreement that we establish up front. So we make it transparent what will happen with the information that they share. And so essentially, we keep what they share with us confidential, and we let them know that unless they disclose something that's in violation of company policy or something that's unethical, or a harassment issue or something of that nature that we're mandated and morally responsible to report.
So not too different from the same sort of confidentiality that you would expect with an external coach.
Not too different. And the biggest question that employees will have is, will this conversation end up in my personnel file?
Of course.
That's the biggest question. And so the answer is no. I mean, it's not something that ends up in their personnel file. So okay. that puts them at ease.
So you mentioned that's your day job. Now, I almost hesitate. You know, by night, are you a vampire? Or I mean, what is the night job?
I can be a night owl. Well, as you know, I recently came out with my book, and so I've spent the last 2.5 years, a lot of evenings and weekends working on that. Working on that book, as well as doing some pro bono coaching, career coaching in the community as well.
Okay, and Mike was kind enough to bring me a copy of his book. I've read some reviews on it. We've talked about it, and we're going to talk more about the book and more about the writing of the book, which kind of fascinated me too as we get into it. In the company, how do people come to you? Do you go looking for people? Do they get assigned to you because they've misbehaved? I mean, how do you end up with the clients, so to speak?
Different ways. So we have an intranet where we market the coaching center and the services that we offer. We also send out information, perhaps on a quarterly basis, letting them know about our workshops as well as our, we call them career clubs, which is the group coaching.
Okay.
So that's another avenue. But now that we've been running for about a couple years, word of mouth. We have a lot of managers who recommend their employees, say, hey, you should check out that class, or I know this is important for you, your career growth, and I want to support that. You might want to contact someone at the coaching center for support. So a lot of word of mouth, peers telling peers, as well as managers supporting their employees.
You know, I read an interesting statistic recently in the Wall Street Journal that I hadn't heard before. It's called the quitting rate or quitting ratio. Mm. And it talked about the number of people that are willing to leave their job without having another job lined up. And it was tracking it back and saying that there are as many people now, or the confidence factor for these people is as high now as it was before the recession, which really speaks to efforts that companies are going to have to go to keep their employees.
Yeah, I think I read the same report or article. Definitely, as the economy improves, people have more options, or at least feel that confidence factor of pursuing them without a safety net in some cases. I think one of the things, the next phase of our development is integrating coaching into a lot of other aspects of the company. So we integrate it with, for example, with the succession planning process and high potential employees. New employees as they come into the organization, right? So when they come in, do they feel supported ongoing, or do they just attend a orientation and then sink or swim, which in many companies, that's often what happens.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to look for ways to support people beyond initial events. Same with our leadership training as well. We incorporated some group coaching to occur ongoing for participants of our leadership one of our leadership programs.
Great. I love to hear that this is being done internally. That's really kind of cool. Well, look, how did you end up in this? What did you do? What did you do wrong before this that you ended up coaching people?
In coaching. You know, I've always had an interest in people and been fascinated by what makes them tick. And you know, my initial interest in my early years was just human resources. That's pretty much what I knew. And I was on a mission to humanize the workforce, because I had come across so many experiences where people were being mistreated or disengaged. And so that was an initial spark way back when. But as far as coaching, I had a class in graduate school around career development and testing, so doing assessments. And so that turned me on to the career coaching aspect of things. And I was fortunate enough to work at one of those one-stop career centers. This was back in Massachusetts. And worked with people from all persuasions, from homemakers of 30 years whose husbands just passed away and now they needed to find a way to support themselves, to factory workers who had just gotten laid off and didn't feel that they had any other skills than, you know, building widgets of whatever sort, to college students who were searching for what now.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that and did a lot of coaching and working with people there, and as well as training.
And, okay, so this was out of state. How'd you end up here then?
Well, I had lived in San Diego prior to that, and before that I was in Cleveland, so I'm originally a Midwestern guy. So started in Cleveland and moved out to San Diego to go to college, San Diego State, and then after working a number of years, went to grad school in Massachusetts. And I knew when I didn't want to walk outside the door five steps because it was too cold, you know, in order to get the paper, the morning paper, it was time to head back to San Diego. And so I did that, and now I'm in Orange County.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. So you really, there, you covered your education. You know, we hear a lot about successes, but tell us about some of the setbacks that you've had to deal with.
Well, there's always certainly setbacks. I can give you a couple with the coaching center that I was referencing earlier. This was the third attempt to get something up and going. So the need's been there a long time among employees.
Sure.
To have this type of coaching support. And the first time, we didn't have enough budget. So we got a team together, we had a plan, and then there wasn't enough budget. So it was a no-go.
It's always about the money.
And then, being as stubborn as I can be sometimes, I decided, you know, I want to try it again. So we tried again maybe the following year, and we were about a month away from launching, and it was a no-go once again, because it, from a timing perspective of other initiatives going on in the organization, it just wouldn't have been a great time to introduce something new like that to employees. So at that point, I'd pretty much given up. And it wasn't until, I'd say, a couple years later, after moving to the gas company, that the opportunity struck again and the time was right. And we kind of reconfigured some things to make it work more effectively in the previous proposals, and we're up and running there.
I think I read that book. If at first you don't succeed, try again.
Yeah, so third time was a charm. And then, of course, the book had plenty of setbacks, as we were talking before the show. I thought I was going to have this thing finished over a year ago. And there were a lot of what I call false peaks. You know, so I don't know if you like to hike at all. Sometimes when you're climbing up and you think you're reaching the summit, and you reach it and you're like, holy crap. there's another.
There's another one behind this one.
There's more. And so I had a lot of those along the way. And some of the setbacks included getting feedback about my book. And I'll never forget my best friend reviewing my very first draft. And he said, Mike, I can't finish reading this. It's too painful. I'm finding myself getting so frustrated.
Oh, boy. Let me just interrupt. Is he still one of your best friends?
He is. It was really difficult. I had to set the manuscript aside for a while. But it was good feedback. And it's true. My first draft was, I wrote most of it on the train going up to LA and back, and I had a lot of, you know, incomplete sentences and run-ons and incoherent thoughts and a lot of things rolled, stream of consciousness rolled into it. And so it just, in the end, it made me dig deeper.
So what did you do different after that? After that kind of, because I'm kind of fascinated. You know, we always hear about successful books, and we tend to think somebody sits down and writes it, and it gets published, and that's it. But you know, I had mentioned to you before the show, I'm kind of fascinated because you've shared some of your setbacks that you had with this, and I think it might encourage some of our audience that has got that book half finished in the bottom drawer there. What'd you do different after getting that kind of input back?
One of the things I did different is I hired an editor. And I knew that I wouldn't necessarily be able to just rely on friends for feedback. So that's one of the things. I thought that might provide me some additional accountability or structure, if you will, if I needed to kind of report on my progress.
Okay.
That was for me personally. I felt that would be helpful. So hiring an editor, someone that was experienced with that. I think also taking some distance from the manuscript every once in a while, and trying to decide how do I want to experience writing this book? Do I want it to be fun, or do I want it to be a chore?
Interesting.
Because initially it was a lot of fun before the editing part.
Yeah.
So I think what shifted was keeping that top of mind and writing when I felt inspired, and try not to put too much pressure on myself.
So it sounds like maybe that was the opposite of the regimented routine of I sit down between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock every night, and that's when I write. That isn't what worked for you.
No, I tried that. I've talked to other authors, and I heard that that's a best practice,
yeah,
if you will, among authors. And I just, my brain doesn't work that way. I work in spurts of inspiration. And so I might not write anything for a week or two, and then all of a sudden I'm writing for 8 hours straight, you know, until 3 in the morning.
You know, I think it's worth pointing out a fact that's so obvious that it gets missed, and that is the definition of best practices. Best practices, in my mind, is what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may not be what worked for somebody else, or what worked for them may not work for you.
Yeah.
And I think you bring that point up, and I think it's a good one to look at, whether you're talking about writing a book or doing anything in your life, is identifying how do you work best.
Yeah, and that's something I advise my clients as well, my coaching clients. As well as the other thing that got me through the book, but it applies to all of us in our careers and how we transition from one place to another, from where we are to where we want to go, and that's what are we passionate about? That's what carried me through this book, through all the setbacks that I ran through. I mean, there are plenty of others,
yeah,
along the way, and working with graphic designers and just learning how to do those types of things. And so with clients as well, you know, something that you're really passionate about at the end of the day that will most often carry you through the difficult times.
You know, and again, that's almost such trite advice, find what you're passionate about.
Right.
But it is so valid, you know. It is just so valid. It's just difficult for those people who haven't spent the time looking for it.
Yeah, for me, I've always been introspective from a very young age. I've always looked at how I can improve myself and what's important to me and what would be meaningful work to do and things of that nature. And, you know, there's many individuals out there who haven't taken that reflection time.
Yeah.
For whatever. There's no judgment at all. It's just they might be working really hard at what they do, and maybe they've been super successful at that too. And it's not until there's a triggering event that perhaps, you know, gives them pause to stop and say, what do I want to do? What legacy do I want to leave? What lifestyle is important to me?
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is so often the triggering events are usually not happy events.
Oftentimes.
Well, look, you kind of lead into another question that I've asked every single guest we've ever had on the radio show. And we've never had a duplicate answer yet. So I'm going to ask you, you know, what is your guiding principle? In other words, what lessons did you learn that sort of is your true north for your work or your life?
I would say that it's taking charge of your own career is a big piece of it. That no one's going to care as much about you and your career as yourself. And what I have found, and one of the reasons why I'm passionate about helping others with their careers, what I've found is many people are looking to their manager or someone else to pave the way for them. And while that's nice to receive that help, and that's certainly a part of managing your career, my philosophy is that you are mostly in charge of your career and all the decisions. After all, you have to live with it.
Yes.
And I remember an experience when I was an undergrad trying to decide what type of program to go into for grad school. I was speaking with this, I think it was a vice president of human resources, and I was a sophomore in college, and I was debating whether to get an MBA or a master's in industrial organizational psychology. And without any hesitation, he said, get the MBA, get the MBA. And, you know, proceeded to explain why. And I took it in, and I just couldn't wrap my arms around it. I said, the psychology route was so much more appealing to me.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I had to make that decision. And to make things full circle, a few years after finishing that degree, I did go back to pursue an MBA in entrepreneurship, and I ended up dropping out.
Oh, nobody's ever done that before. Shh, we won't let that go out over the air.
Exactly. I ended up dropping out. I gained a lot from it, but at the time my son was born, I took a leave of absence and basically never made my way back. And I'm fine with that. I have no qualms. You know, he was my priority and still remains a priority to me. So, but what I say is that someone else's, it goes back to the best practices or the best advice. Ultimately, you have to internalize it, what's really going to be best for you. And so when someone approaches me and says, Mike, what steps do I need to take to become a director or something of that nature? You know, what positions? They're thinking, what positions do I need to have or what skills do I need? And my answer is really, look around, because I think you'll find there's directors or officers that have gotten to where they are through many, many paths. Just like you haven't received the same answer twice.
Right.
There isn't a single path to achieve one career outcome. There's a lot of different paths. And so it's really just part of using your intuition, part using some feedback. It's good to know yourself and get feedback from others. But ultimately, finding your own path, discovering your own path.
I love that answer. Take charge. And listen to this. We're talking to someone who specializes in career coaching, who specializes in helping people design their career. And the advice here for himself is take charge of your own career. No, I don't find that inconsistent whatsoever at all. Yeah. It is, get help, but hey, it's your career.
Yeah, and I think the assumption that I have, or the worldview, is that people have the answers inside of them, and part of my role is helping to bring that out, helping to draw that out from them, and help them get some clarity, and help them realize the strengths that they have, and look, build on the positives, the assets that they have that they might be discounting for one reason or another.
And there, folks, is the essence of what coaching is all about. It's believing that the clients you have the ability to solve the problems themselves, but you've got to help unlock it. Well, look, we want to go further. I want to get back and talk a little bit more about the book and share some of what's in there with our audience. But our producer's going to take us to a commercial break, and then we'll be back in just a minute. And we're back. We have with us in the studio today Mike Gelman, author of Pipe Dreams, the Seven Pipelines of Career Success, and a coach, internal coach for SoCal Gas. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
Hey, it's been a fascinating discussion so far. Let me just share with our audience here. I mean, one, this is a good-looking book. I like the cover and that. A couple of things that really hit me. One, he's got an excerpt here advocating the book from Marshall Goldsmith. Boy, that means a lot to me. Marshall Goldsmith can advocate it. And two is his foreword has been written by Ann Shen Smith, is that right?
That's correct.
Ann Shen Smith, who is the former chairman and chief executive officer of the Southern California Gas Company. So more than one person has said this is well worth the time that you would spend to read it and talk about it. What drove you to write a book? Was this for marketing purposes? I mean, you mentioned you were on the train. There's other things to do on the train, don't they?
There are. Napping, for instance. Yeah. Working, yeah. All kinds of things you can do. I think I've always had a book in me, if you will. I've had a desire to write a book, like probably like many authors. With this, though, what really pushed me to write it was to help clients who oftentimes were under mistaken, like a myth. I call it, and in the book I talk about these 10 myths that many employees have. And there's a pattern of employees that in different places I've worked who would say, you know, if I just keep my head down, work hard, people will take notice and I'll get tapped on the shoulder for that next great opportunity. And that does happen to some people, but you know, 90% of the time, it's typically things that you need to be doing to get noticed or to take charge of your career. And so there are a lot of things of that nature that my work should speak for itself. Or
another myth, yeah.
Or like my manager's not shopping me around enough. Or I'm too old to restart my career.
Ouch.
And so these kept coming up over and over again. And I thought, gosh, you know, I really want to find a way to address that. And so what I did is I had criteria for the book. I said, you know, I want to write a book where I don't have to do any research and don't need to cite anything. I said, for better or for worse.
Okay.
I wanted to draw from my own experience. And so that's what I've done just for my own personal journey over the years. Of trials and tribulations over the years of my career, as well as clients that I've worked with, and I've included some of those stories in the book as well.
Well, you certainly avoid any copyright issues when you don't research and you don't steal from other people, and you just write your own thoughts. I like that. I like that a lot. So you talk in here about a model. Is that sort of the essence of what your book is based on?
So that's the framework, yes. So there's a pipeline model. So since I work for a natural gas company.
Oh, of course. I didn't get that connection. Thank you.
which I've been there almost 10 years now. And they're part of Sempra Energy, which is the parent company. So I've been with the Sempra family of companies for almost 10 years. And it's been a great organization with incredible employees, incredible leadership. And it's something that, for me, I just felt, you know, that would be a good hook. That would be a good hook. And so I use that as the model and talk about different parts of the natural gas system and pipes and things of that nature as a metaphor, and then draw it to how does that apply to your career? So for example, if you have a leaky pipe, what kind of leaks do you have in your career? And it might be that technically, you're very proficient, but you leave dead people in your wake.
Yeah.
That's what we would call a leak.
Okay.
So how do you patch that up, or how do you repair that? So I make these back and forth analogies, and the pipeline model is kind of the anchor for that discussion.
And who did you write the book for? Who did you envision reading this book?
You know, I envisioned for people that I support all the time, I'd say medium individuals, employees who are working in mid-sized to large organizations, whether they're early or mid-career, and even individuals that are later in their career that want to still make a meaningful contribution before they retire. So that's really the targeted audience.
And have you found that have you been surprised by who really is reading the book?
You know, what I'm finding is a lot of college students.
Really? That's outside what you just described?
It is. And I had to think about it. I said, well, that makes sense because actually a lot of my clients within the company are fresh from school. They had just gotten their MBA or engineering degree. And so that does make sense. Why not have this at the very start of your career early on? And a lot of people in our workshops. And so it's something I had somewhat overlooked, kind of going a little step further while they're in college.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that I have friends of mine referring this, giving this to their sons and daughters who are in college and things of that nature. And so, which is great. Why not have a head start?
So have you identified another myth there that people graduating from college know what they want to do with their life? Myth?
Yeah, you know, I would say that many of them don't. They might know that first job that they want, but then after they're in that first job, there's a lot of confusion about where they want to go.
Yeah. Talk to me about the segment of the population, for lack of a better term, the too old. I'm too old to change. I'm too old to learn. Okay, what are they going to get out of this book? What do you have to say to them about pipe dreams and career success when they've already got 50 years under their belt or 40 years or whatever?
It's all about choices, in my view. So one is they're typically in a lot of pain or suffering in some way right now, typically, if they're interested in having a discussion around the career. And usually there's some internal resistance to that because of the effort that it would take or the upheaval it would cause by taking some different steps. And so when I coach those clients, it's basically, I think Dear Abby had a philosophy, how old will you be in 5 years, you know, if you don't do anything, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of adopted that back then. How do you want to live the remainder of your career? Do you want it to be miserable and just deal with it and check in and check out? You can, that's an option. Or do you want to feel fulfilled and like you're making a positive difference or whatever is important to you? And if the answer is the latter, then it becomes a discussion around, well, let's explore that a little bit more and find out what is important to you or what's going to be important to you when you retire, right? Kind of post, many people don't even plan for the, they just know they want to retire, but then they're miserable after they retire.
Yeah.
Because they've identified themselves so much with the career that they've had.
You know, I think that, you know, a lot of coaching that I've been requested to help people on lately has been people that are later in their career and they've accomplished, they've made significant accomplishments and they're burned out, they're bored with it, or they don't want the pace anymore, and they're certainly not interested in retiring. They're healthy, they're vibrant, they're looking for the next challenge, and it's been a lot of years since they had to think about a career change, and they don't use the term career. I mean, it's like, I've had a career. Okay, now do another one.
And there's plenty of examples of people out there who have reinvented themselves time and time again. 60 years old, 70 years old, even 80 years old, moving into a new business venture, right?
Yeah.
So there's plenty of examples of people. So it's, in my mind, it's never too late.
Yeah, so this book doesn't have an age limit to it.
It doesn't, no. It doesn't. Because it focuses on principles, enduring principles. You know, identifying your what you're passionate about and your core purpose, your calling. You know, what do you like to do, your preferences. So it gets at principles that are timeless, in my view.
You hit on something that I've been running into a lot lately in requests for people that are working successfully, but come to me and say, I don't have a clear vision of where I'm going. They're not saying I need a new career, but they don't have a vision of where they're going. Is that a big part of the work that you end up doing in this career success?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's helping them to clarify what that vision is for them. And it usually starts with regards to what's important to them.
Yeah.
And that brings a level of clarity, and then say, okay, if this is what's important to you, where might this lead you? And helping them to create that vision for themselves, and then helping them to identify the steps that they need to take to realize that vision.
If I just, seven pipelines of career success, are there seven secret sauces here that that you have for success?
I wouldn't necessarily say secret sauces, if you will, but certainly there's the passion and purpose, I would say, are at the hub, the core, if you will, of the model. And then there's some preparation to do, and that is... Part of that's kind of knowing yourself and knowing what you want, understanding what your preferences are. They're all P words.
Accidentally pipeline. Or on purpose? Oh, pipeline. We're
on
back
purpose.
To that. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, what are your preferences? So what types of things are you interested in? What kinds of activities do you tend to gravitate towards naturally or find yourself doing? Even if it's not a priority, you just find yourself naturally gravitating towards those types of activities or situations or people, whatever it may be. What's your personality like, right? Certain personalities lend themselves better to certain career choices than others. It's not to say that you can't be a bubbly person who's in an accounting career and be successful. You can. I've actually met.
Yeah, it might be very helpful.
You certainly stand out. Yeah, you stand out. In fact, it's usually a missing link. They help bridge the connections between that department and all the other departments within the company.
Okay.
And so I'm not of the mindset that there's only one personality type or anything like that for a particular career. But there are definitely some... correlations, if you will,
sure,
that tend to go
make it easier.
If you're a bubbly personality, something that deals more a career more with people, like sales or teaching or things of that nature, you're going to get your needs met more easily that way. And so I look into other aspects of the model, include their principles and values, which I talked about. Their performance. So oftentimes many employees will overlook their performance, for better or worse. So there might be some strengths that they have that they don't acknowledge, for example, because it's something that comes naturally to them, so they might take it for granted. They don't realize that not everybody can do what they do. Vice versa, some people have development areas or weaknesses that they're not attuned to, and they're not acknowledging that could be a barrier, a roadblock for them to advance their career. And so I'd speak about the role of performance in their career and the need to do their current job well, first and foremost, before they are reaching out for the next thing, ideally. Okay. Sometimes it's just not the right fit.
Yeah,
and I've had that. I had a move where I made a career transition into a community development role, which used a lot of similar skills of facilitation and skills and whatnot in my organizational development background. But what I discovered was that particular... I wouldn't have known unless I tried it, quite honestly. I just discovered that... When you get down to the details of it, it wasn't the right fit for me.
Okay.
Right? So sometimes it's looking at that as well.
You mentioned a little earlier assessments. Do you use assessments much in the work that you do, coaching and both career advice here?
I do. Well, certainly in the workshop that we do, all the participants take an assessment. So we use, right now, we use the strong interest inventory, which has been around a long time, mm-hmm. as you may know, and it's easy for employees to digest. There's a lot of other assessments that I use with clients depending on where they're at. I don't always use an assessment with a client. When I find that it will be helpful for them, I may use something like a DISC profile or the Berkman method as another great tool, or emotional intelligence like the EQ assessment. So there's a lot of different assessments out there that I use when I feel it'll be beneficial, but not across the board.
Okay, good. Well, look, we've talked about a lot of things here. As we kind of get ready to wrap up, I want to just give you a chance. I have a bad habit of talking over the guests because I get so excited about what you're talking about. So if there's something that you don't feel you had enough chance to make a point on, or I talked over it, or that we didn't cover, what else would you like to share with our audience today?
Well, I've enjoyed being here, Doug. Thank you for having me on. I would just say that with regards to the book, I've written it in a way to, with an honest voice, to not gloss over things that are difficult. And I talk about how do you navigate obstacles, for example, and deal with setbacks, for example. And so I think that can be of value to listeners out there that might be struggling or feeling stuck, that I've written this from kind of my own personal perspective, as well as working with clients, so from both ends of it. And I think, I know there's many coaches listening.
I hope.
On the call, yeah, perhaps. Maybe not. It might just be that those four people you were referring to earlier.
The family.
Exactly. My parents might be listening, too. But I think really it's digging deep, and I know it can be trite at times to go with your passion, and it's not easy. Nobody said it was easy. But I know just from my own experience that when I've followed my passion, things have a way of happening. And it doesn't happen by magic either. So it's not necessarily the woo-woo. Just have your intention and the universe will respond. In many respects, it does, it can. But in others, there's still steps you need to take to bring things to fruition.
Well, thank you. You know, Mike, I just want to mention to the audience that I was talking to Mike, and I see so many applications for this book. I mean, I read a lot, and there's lots of books that are great resources for one specific thing. This book, I think, has a much more universal appeal. I see it not, as you mentioned when you were talking about who your audience was, sure, for the person that's in the middle of their career, maybe in a medium to large company, it might help them give them some ideas how to navigate successfully to move up the ladder, so to speak. On the other hand, you pointed out that you were surprised that college students just coming out and getting into their career, that hey, they found some real value in reading this and thinking about it as they're getting going. And I was also looking at it with an eye towards coaches, as many coaches find that among the things they're coaching, some of the things that you talk about in this book, you've got great questions in here. And Mike's also got is it a workbook that we're calling it, or a journal?
It's a journal. Yeah, there's a journal guide that's available on my website, www.mikegelman.com. And they can download it for free, whether they've purchased the book or not. It doesn't matter. And most of the questions are drawn from the book, and it can serve as a great resource for coaches or employees alike to start their own journey.
Yeah, that's great. I know as a coach, I frequently look for little cheater sheets of questions that help me in those moments when I go brain dead and I don't know what to ask. So that's great. Well, look, you mentioned your website. How else do people get in touch with you?
They could email me at mike@mikegelman.com or through LinkedIn.
Okay.
Pretty active on LinkedIn, so either of those methods would be the best way to reach me.
And they can go to Amazon and buy the book?
They can, yeah. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble
okay.
as well.
We still have Barnes & Noble. Okay, great.
There's a few of them around.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for being with us today. It's certainly been a pleasure. I've learned a lot, and I know our audience probably has too. So, again, I just want to say welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio community.
Great. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. While you're there, be sure to check out our archives for some of our past shows with some other great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, HR professionals, interesting people. So just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com, and we can talk. And if you missed our previous shows, either our website or you can go to dgefeller, that's dgefeller.podbean.com, and look at 6 years' worth of interesting guests and topics to talk about. Before we sign off, I want to mention again the February ICF Orange County Chapter Meeting titled Building Stronger Relationships from the Boardroom to the Bedroom. That's their Valentine's special. With Team Darst. It's February 12th at the Wyndham Hotel in Costa Mesa. So be sure to put that on your calendar. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. Signing off, I hope you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals and enhance your career. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.